Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Connect and Grow Radio Show. So today we are excited to have Kathy Ashton speaking about nutrition. And I'm just going to be really clear and upfront here that, you know, we do have technical difficulties at times. So we're just going to, as we move into the show, and we're going to officially start at 9 o'clock. So we're going to play you a little bit of music that will help us. Good morning, Kathy. You're here.
I am here. We've done it.
Oh, we have done it. So we're live now, and we've even got Natalia listening in this morning. So that's super, super cool.
Good morning, Natalia. So, how are you?
So for the listeners at home, what we're going to be doing is Natalia and I are going to have a little bit of a practice run at some point so we can get Natalia on the show as a regular guest as well. So, Kathy, we might just jump straight into it because, you know, we've got technology working, so that's pretty exciting. So let's give the audience just a little bit about you first so that they can get the feel, and it will make a little more sense as we move into, you know, sharing about the articles in the magazine and things like that. So I'll hand it over to you to just give a little bit of a intro about who you are and what you do and where people can find you, and then we'll also put the links in the comments later, and in the recording we'll put it in the write-up as well.
Okie dokie. So will I start at the beginning? A very quick synopsis starting at the beginning. So good morning, everybody. My name is Kathy Ashton. I am a medicinal nutritionist. So what that means is someone who looks at food as medicine and food alongside medicine. So I deal with a lot of people who have health challenges or have been diagnosed with certain sorts of disease processes. And they want to know how their diet can complement a treatment regime that they may be doing. So, or can be using, you know, where there's a lot of side effects with medications. So how can we sort of mitigate those by using food as medicine as well? So that's kind of what is my big focus. I became a medicinal nutritionist when my husband himself was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So we wanted to know how diet impacts on multiple sclerosis. So I went back to university and studied and got my degree in nutritional medicine. So that's kind of what we do and how we do it. And I work out of Health 104, which is in Canterbury Road, Middle Park. I suppose is that what we're
doing? Yeah, that's perfect. I love it. Like, and what I loved is what you do, but why you do it. Like yesterday, even though for whatever reason that recording didn't work, yesterday when we did the live show, it talked all about the importance of why with your goals. And so I loved that you shared about why you went on to further study and how you got into this space.
Yes, we went down a Western medicine model to start off with. You know, we went down and saw all the doctors and they told us everything that we needed to do. But I myself had had fibromyalgia many, many years earlier and was going down the road of very heavy drugs and getting onto methotrexate and all of these nasty drugs. And I spoke to my rheumatologist at the time and I said to her, how does my diet impact this? Because I was a real sugar junkie. And she said, oh, there was no scientific evidence to prove that diet had any role in it. So I was like, oh, okay, fine. And then I went away and did my own study and thought, no, you know, I think diet plays a big part of it. So I changed my diet back then. This was when I was in my early 30s, when I had three little babies running around. And I changed my diet. And within sort of a week to 2 weeks, all the pain that I had from my fibromyalgia had completely dissipated. Chris was like, well, you did it years ago, so surely to goodness, diet must play some role in multiple sclerosis. And at the time, Chris was, he was a dairy junkie. Oh, my goodness. We used to have so much ice cream. It was, you know, crazy. So it was like, okay, there has to be more to it. So I studied nutritional medicine and then I went to America and I studied under the doctors who use food as medicine over in America and who specialized in MS. Mm-hmm. So it was like, wow, there is so much where, you know, the immune system, when you eat certain foods, the immune system actually has what we call cross-reactivity or cellular mimicry. It looks very similar to, you know, like the myelin sheath, and it starts attacking the myelin sheath. It's almost like you could kind of think of it as an allergic reaction, if you like, to certain foods. So and that's what sort of set it all up. So we changed his diet dramatically and we've implemented things. That was back in 2009. We sort of started this with him and then I went over to America and studied a lot from about 2014 on. And that's when we sort of changed everything and he's doing really, really well now. So
so good to hear.
Yeah, so it does. Yeah. It's the reason I get out of bed in the morning because people, I think we often, when we are looking at Western medicine, we are told that diet plays no role and it's just not the truth. And there's just so much we can do and be empowered. You know, we don't have to have a certain condition and feel hopeless and helpless about it. We can actually feel empowered and be really take control and have our own responsibility and make huge differences. You know, small changes can make huge differences.
100%.
Yeah.
So that's Love what it. I do. Yeah, so there we go.
Thank you. So we, you and I met when you came to my event in, I think that was September or something, in Mulgrave, when you came to my like 2-hour event talking to businesses in the disability sector. And from there we got to know each other, and we're also part of the same women's networking group, which is awesome. Yep. But then I said, we had a chat, and I said, hey, I'm putting together this magazine, and by this time I'd only done one edition, and then it was for the second one. So I invited you to, after you had shared that you do your experience and you had already written in other magazines, I'm thinking, you know what, this would be awesome, because the whole philosophy behind Connect and Grow, whether it's the podcast, the radio show, the magazine, the events, is to connect people so that they have opportunities and they have choices of service providers. So I reached out to you, and we had that great meeting, which was awesome. And then from October, you started to become a regular writer in the magazine. So what I'd like to talk to a little bit today, even though we're in March, and for those of you that don't know, the magazine comes out on the 16th of the month, and it's available in multiple ways. But in February, we talked about self-love, self-care, and boundaries. And I have to say, some of the feedback I've been getting from the readers around those gluten-free choc chip cookies, I mean, oh my gosh, they're like, wow, that is so, they're so yummy. And to use the words that some people have used, they don't feel guilty having them. So can you talk to the listeners a little bit about that self-love and how food can play out in that?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Well, you know, there's this old, what do we call them? Comfort foods. And we call them comfort foods because depending on our programming, depending on our childhood, there's lots of psychological issues around it. But a lot of the time we reach for food for self-love, for self-comfort, for making us feel good. And we all do it, right? Everybody does it, you know.
100%. That's how I gained a lot of weight.
Exactly. But, you know, it even goes down to not necessarily gaining for, you know, eating foods that make you gain weight, but it's also from, you know, in winter and you feel cold, or you've got a flu, you'll reach for a soup, right? Because it makes you feel better. And it feels like you're nurturing your body by eating soups, or it's cold winter's night and you think, oh, a really big pot of stew would be really delicious because it makes me feel good. It makes me sort of, you know, winter's such a funny time of year. I love it, but a lot of people don't. So it's a matter of doing that. And then we have a psychological side of it, because if we want to eat a cookie, for instance, because, you know, the brain is telling us that we need some carbohydrate and we want some something sweet, or we've got those gut microbiomes that like the sweet foods are screaming at us, telling us that we need to eat something. And then we go and eat a chocolate chip cookie, for instance, and then we sit there feeling really guilty about it. Mm. You know, it kind of defeats the purpose. So I put that in, that recipe in last month, because I thought, no, well, if we can go gluten-free, we go plant-based, we can still get a little bit of chocolate in there, because chocolate's really good for the gut microbiome. It's really good for our serotonin, helps us to sleep. It's good for stress, you know. So there's nothing wrong with a little bit of chocolate, as long as we don't go over the top, right? We don't need all 24 of the cookies all at once. This is not a
Yeah, so make them and invite your friends around for a little fun time.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of like, well, everything in that isn't, as long as it's eaten in moderation, is not a bad thing. So you've got gluten-free, so it's not causing a leaky gut, because gluten causes a leaky gut, which then sets up an inflammatory response, or an immune response, so it causes all sorts of issues from that point of view. You've got the almond flour, the coconut flour, good sources of protein there. And you've got a little bit of coconut oil in there. Well, there's got some good fats in that. We're using a flax egg, and then we're having a half a cup of the dairy-free vegan chocolate chips, and it comes out delicious and fabulous, and a little bit of self-love.
Beautiful, because self-love is so important for our overall health and well-being, and bringing it together in your food is so important. I grew up with, my mum did a lot of entertaining and things like that, so there was always like lots of different recipes and things. And I also noticed that some people use food as their way of letting people know they love them. Like, so here, I've got to cook for you, I've got to feed you and things like that. So sometimes I think, and I'd love your input on this, Kathy, that sometimes I think it's important to be able to set some healthy boundaries as well, because as we know, mainstream diets or the foods that we have available can have a lot of preservatives in them that aren't necessarily good for our body over a long period of time. And sometimes when people are saying, oh, you're too skinny, or I need to feed you, even if you're attempting to release weight, it can be hard to have those conversations with people, but so very important though at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with you. It's you walk such a fine line, right? It's such a fine line on where you draw your boundaries around these sorts of things without insulting people. If you come to my house, I'll cook for you, because that is my way of showing people that I love them. If I don't cook for you, it's a question. You have to go, well, maybe she doesn't like me.
I'll keep that in mind if I ever come over.
No, yes, but you know what I'm saying? You know, if I love you, I am going to cook for you. I am going to feed you, so, because that's what I do. And that is a huge expression of my love for someone, is to show them that I love them by feeding them. But I do it in it can be as simple as just making you a beautiful salad, right?
Sure.
I don't need to show you that I love you by cooking a sponge cake with cream. You know,
sure.
That to me would be showing you that I don't love you, because I'm feeding you food that is not good for your body.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. Sorry. So that would come down to your knowledge, right? So I remember I had a friend who Greek. Yes, his family was Greek. And he invited me around to his family's place. And his mum had some olives and sun-dried tomatoes and some other things that I wasn't sure what they were. And she's got this out, she's going, come on, we'll eat. And my friend had said to me that his dad was cooking a lamb on the spit. So I was a little confused by this like layout. It was a big smorgasbord of lots of different foods. There was fruit in there as well, and there was like the capsicum that had been in oil, and all of these sorts of things. And so I'm just having a little eat, and I had had surgery at that time as well, so bariatric surgery, so I can only eat small portions and then I'm full. So sometimes an entree size, even smaller, I'm full, depending on the food. So I'm sitting there eating a couple of things, being very polite. And then, we clean up those dishes, and then they bring in all the salads and all the big cooked veggies and all of this meat. And there was chicken as well. And And his mum's saying, come on, you eat, you eat. And I'm like, if I eat anymore, I'm not going to be very well at all. And I found it very challenging because for them, it was like nearly four courses of food. Yeah. And especially for, sorry, what was that?
Way too much.
Yes. And especially for someone who had had bariatric surgery and our stomach is smaller, or in some cases there's that pouch developed, like, so we're not going to go into all of that today, that's another podcast. But yeah, I found it very challenging to be polite without needing to tell my story. Oh, look, I've had bariatric surgery, because in my friend's mum's mind, if I didn't eat, I was actually rejecting her.
Absolutely. That's big in any of that Middle Eastern, Mediterranean. If you look at their cultures, the cultures are to feed you. The cultures are food. You know, food is such a huge language of love for so many people. And it's a matter of being able to go to show that you appreciate everything that they do for you, but it's not good for your body. We eat a plant-based diet, right? So when we go to these smorgasbords and the family are cooking a roast dinner, they all expect us, or they did back in the day when we first started off, they would expect us to be eating the meat. And, of course, this was not good for Chris.
Mm.
So the way that I handled it back in those times is I was just honest. And without, because you've got to be honest without criticizing their choices. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to say to them, oh, look, we don't eat meat because it's bad for you and it does this, this, and this, all of these sorts of things. Because you then question, making them question their choices, and you kind of look like you're criticizing. You can't do that. So you'll never get an invitation back. So the way we handled it was to just be very honest and say, you know, Chris has multiple sclerosis, and if he eats that, that's going to make him very unwell. So, you know, we love it and thank you, and we'll eat all around it. We'll eat all the beautiful vegetables that you've cooked and things like that, but we just can't go down that road. And most people, once they understood why we were making the choices we were, they didn't see it as criticism of their choices.
I love that.
Yeah, so it just made it, and I know sometimes you don't want to say to people, hey, I've had bariatric surgery, but do you know what? Sometimes I think if we are just honest with our own stories and we sit in our own truths, I think it's just people are more accepting of that.
Yes. Well, I know, and the listeners that have followed me for years know that I'm very open about sharing about having bariatric surgery. And one of the reasons that I had it, outside of being morbidly obese, because I was 168 kilos at one point, but one of the reasons I had it was because a huge part of my stomach had died off from having ulcers and reflux. And a lot of these symptoms that came with obesity for a long time that impacted my gut health. And I had tried so many things that at the point where a lot of my stomach was having issues, so that dying off part, there wasn't enough space or ability for it to heal, for the enzymes to be released properly, for it to even function. So for me, I went with the bariatric surgeon, even though he gave me an option to go to a different surgeon to have the same procedure, because he said, either way, you're very unwell. But I've made also the most of it to say, okay, and it should never be an easy, a quick decision either to have any form of surgery. But I do my best to choose nutritional foods, but I do notice that when I eat certain foods, and especially with my neurodivergent traits as well, because that seems to play an interesting part in it, is that some foods will give me energy and some foods will drain my energy. And a classic example is people will go, oh, I have decaf coffee in the afternoon because I don't want to be hyped up for the evening. I'm actually the opposite when it comes to caffeine. If I have coffee, like with caffeine, for me, I'm not hyped up. I actually want to have a nap. And if I have decaf coffee, I'm like, right, it's like the Energizer Bunny. So it's really interesting how the food choices that we make can impact so many aspects of our health.
Totally agree. The interesting thing is that, you know, there's a bit of, and you would know this more than anyone else, is that there
you're is just a, Kathy, you're just a little distant.
You'd know this more than any, is that better?
Just a little, yeah.
You'd know this better than anyone else, that there is a real stigma around bariatric surgery, and there just shouldn't be, because, you know, and about people, obesity in itself is that it is a disease. There is so much more to it. It's not about people just sitting down and eating all the wrong foods. That's not what it's about. There is so much more to it with metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance, and there's just so much to it. And I think if you've gone down that road and you've now look at how well you are and how healthy you are, I just think it's such, I really commend you having done that and making all those choices. Now it's a matter of going, because you only eat small amounts, it's going, well, what are nutritious foods for me? And what works for my body. And we're all different. Everybody's bodies are different. So it's the way some people have coffee. Coffee's good for the gut microbiome. They really like it, but don't do it in dairy to start off with because it's so inflammatory. Do it in a plant-based milk. And if you want to do decaf, you know, do decaf if that's what works for you. But sometimes I sit back and go, well, how did they get the caffeine out of the coffee? Because it's a natural thing.
Yes.
So, you know, what processes have they used to get the caffeine out of the coffee? So you'd be better off just having caffeinated coffee, or don't drink caffeinated coffee. Don't drink coffee at late in the afternoon. Have yourself a herbal tea, or have yourself lemon in water, or, you know, have something different. Because it's a matter of sitting back with all your looking at your food choices and going, what is going to work for my body, number one, and number two, where am I getting my nutrients from? How am I feeding my gut microbiome? Because it's the gut microbiome, the healthier they are, the healthier you are, because they're a driver of the immune system. The gut microbiome teach your immune system how to behave.
Yeah.
As one of its roles is to teach our immune system, an immature immune system, how to actually behave. So if you've got all the wrong gut microbiome species in there, all the ones that like eating sugar and all of these sorts of things, then potentially they're not going to teach your immune system how to behave properly. If you're not feeding them, you haven't got a strong, healthy gut microbiome. As far as neurodiversity is concerned, you would understand this so well. You put preservatives and food flavorings and emulsifiers and all of these chemicals in there, they just play havoc with your brain. You know, you've got fire on the brain, and a lot of the time when you've got a child who's got is neurodiverse, you're absolutely poisoning their systems by giving them these foods.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the food processing companies don't give a continental. Whereas if you got a child and you gave them those gluten-free chocolate chip cookies, they're going to love you forever for it, because and there's nothing wrong with the child eating those. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's still a chocolate chip cookie, which you can think is bad, but when you look at the ingredients in it, there is nothing in there that your grandmother couldn't make, you know, that you couldn't make.
I love that point because I remember, and like as a child, but also I think back to this a lot too. You know, we have become a society that is so busy. And when we get Natalia on the show, we'll talk about this a bit more too. But we're so busy, right? We're running from A to B and things like that. But I think in a way we've overcomplicated our life at times. And because we're so busy and we've got access to the internet and we've got and we're expecting instant gratification in a lot of aspects of our life, instant gratification in food, instant gratification in love, instant gratification in getting a message back. So if we send someone a message, we often expect them to respond right here, right now. And when they don't, you know, there's a story made up about that. So I remember, like, you know, cooking with my mum, and it was all we went to the cupboard and we got the ingredients out of the cupboard. We as kids didn't have takeout a lot. We had fish and chips on a Friday night, but that was kind of it. There wasn't always the I remember for school lunches, we had to take our lunches, and we just recently had a family holiday and this conversation came up. But, you know, mum goes, oh, yeah, she'll never let me live down the ham sandwiches. But she was – it was always, you know, the vegetables and the fruit and the basics of food. But now if I'm hungry right now and I don't have time to cook because I'm not making that time – I can just jump on my phone right now and order Uber Eats.
Yeah, and it'll come to your door. Yeah.
Yep. How easy is that, right?
Yeah, but it's not necessarily the right healthy choice for your body.
And long term, as you've
it's what I call, you know, you were saying instant gratification. It's what I actually call oral entertainment.
So oh, interesting.
Right. So the food that we actually buy in the supermarket is oral entertainment. It's not food. It's not health. It's not wellness. It's oral entertainment. Whereas, you know, you go back 50 years and, which is a awfully long time, but go back 50 years and food was healthy and what we ate was healthy and it was there to actually nourish our bodies and give us energy and allow us to do everything that we needed to do. Whereas today, most of it and most, you know, Uber Eats, you can do McDonald's in Uber Eats. You can do, and people do. You can do all the pizza companies do it. Everybody does it. And
the Asian foods.
Yeah, it's just oral entertainment. It just tastes good. Your taste buds in your mouth are going, yay, this is fabulous, and it tastes fantastic. It's great. But there's so often it's not healthy for you. And portion control, you know, you're getting a huge container of something and you're eating it all and then you're going to bed on it.
Yes. And the other thing with that too is that, and I remember this happened not long after I had bariatric surgery, and we sort of got past the honeymoon phase of it. So everybody was kind of, Jackie's had surgery. We don't need to talk about it anymore. But I still had the issue every time I went out to eat that they would serve me the dinner plate size meal and I could eat maybe 1/16 of it, like it was a very small amount, especially because some of it was a heavier food. So, and when I started to say to places, could I just get an entree size of that, please? I'm happy to pay the full price, because it was kind of like they always thought I was getting out of paying the full price. And a lot of places wouldn't accommodate me. I either had to just have an entree and choose from the entrees, or I had to have the main meal size. And then so one place I remember they just wouldn't accommodate at all. And it wasn't about the money. But I said to them, they came and they said, what was wrong with the meal? And I said, well, as I explained to you earlier, I can only eat small portions and I really only wanted a small serving. But you've insisted that I have this and it's not a problem to pay for it, and they go, but we're throwing all this food out. And I went, it's kind of not my problem, because I did ask, right? And I think that's the thing too, that with money being such a stressor at the moment, particularly here in Australia, for people to get by, pay their mortgage, things like that. So many changes going on for us here in Australia. And a lot of people don't want to throw the food out because they've just spent, you know, potentially $40 on this meal. So they think that they've got to eat it all.
Yeah, sure. And it's, it just overloads your system, doesn't allow you to sleep well. If you're having it of a night time, you're not sleeping well. And, you know, there's no self-love in that by stuffing yourself with food. No self-love whatsoever. It's actually doing, you know, we're treating our bodies more like garbage cans from that point of view, and we're not. But it's a matter of being able to educate. We need the whole landscape of food needs to be, and how we interact with it, that landscape needs to be changed from both restaurants all the way through. Just because it comes on a whopping great big plate doesn't mean it's better.
Yes.
So, you know, and it's like, and I think this is a, this is kind of comes from the Americans, right? When American portion sizes are just huge. But you eat all of that and you'll end up looking, you'll be just as huge, right? And this is what we don't need. Whereas if we all went back to eating how we did and the portion size back in, which is all we need, back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, so it would make a big difference to everything that we're doing. And, you know, portion control is such an easy thing. It was easy in one way and not so in the other, because we're getting so used to these huge gigantic sizes. But if we actually just go back and you'd start portion controlling everything and just start eating off a small bread and butter plate, everyone will find that they're beginning to feel better. And it doesn't really matter, you know, it's these type of small changes that make huge differences within your body. So if you're still hungry after that small plate, then eat fruit. You know, have a bowl of fruit. Have all of those things, but things that Mother Nature recognizes.
Not
things that come out, and drink water, and not things that come out of packets, but drink water. Yeah, absolutely. It's a very interesting concept, I think.
Yes. Well, one of the things that we were taught when we had bariatric surgery, well, at least I was with the team I worked with, was we had a 30-minute rule because of our gut size. Yeah. And that was, we have no drinks for 30 minutes before we eat, and no drinks for 30 minutes after we eat. And then one of the things that I developed, and then I started sharing with people that I work with, is to put my knife and fork down when I eat.
Between every meal, everything. Yeah. It takes 20 minutes for the brain to recognize that you've eaten food.
Yes.
So it's called the cephalic phase of digestion, and it takes 20 minutes. Now, most of us can eat a huge plate of food within 5 minutes, you know, 10 minutes. It's gone, especially if you're watching the TV. So if you're watching the TV and your brain is concentrating on the TV, if you're sitting at your computer and your brain is concentrating on something that you're doing there and you're eating, your brain isn't even seeing the food go in.
So, I've had that experience where I've either been watching TV or eating while working, and especially because of my neurodivergent traits, I get so hyper focused on something that I will just automatic, especially when this became a habit with a different job I had, we had to be in the, like, at the computer a lot. We didn't have a lot of breaks, and so I would grab something, even if it was like strawberries or olives or something. It kind of didn't matter what the food was. It was there in a bowl and I would just eat it. And then at one point I turned and went, because I don't register hunger a lot. Very different once you've had bariatric surgery. But I remember looking and going, where the heck did I put that food? Because I didn't even register that I had eaten it. So it is so easy.
They're going, what did I just eat? I've got no idea what I've just eaten and how much I've just eaten. And it's just, you just eat it with, and you don't even register it. So, you know, putting your knife down between meals, between each mouthful of food, is an incredibly good little trick, a little hack, if you like, to make the meal last longer. And you will find if you're doing that, your brain starts registering the fact that you've finished, and then all the hormones that are involved in going, hey, you're now full, will kick in a lot quicker. And then you'll go, hey, I don't need to eat any more of this. I don't need to eat this massive, gigantic plate of food.
Yeah. The other tip tip I used to give my clients that I was coaching around weight management and the health coaching, I used to get them to, I never said that they couldn't have anything, because it needs to be a choice, right? Because if you tell somebody you have to do this, they will either embrace it if they've asked for it, but if they haven't asked for it but it's kind of for their best interest, there can be a bit of resistance to it. So once again, that mindset. So I remember saying to this one lady, she was really determined to release weight, and she had chocolate at night while watching a show with her daughter. And I said, that's great that you've identified your habit. I said, how do you do it? She goes, we get the block of chocolate, we open it up, we put it beside us. And I said, okay, what if instead of having the block of chocolate between you, you had you got up in the ad, because it was mainstream TV, so it had ads on it. And I said, what if you got up in the ad and went over to the bench and had one block of chocolate? Not the whole block, like one square. And I said, and then you can then, and she goes, but we put the dishwasher on, or we do this, or we do that in the break. I said, great, but what if that's your time? You can have that one little square. And then I want you to notice, as you have the little square, to really stop and focus on that one square of chocolate. She came back to me about a month later for the next appointment, and she goes, Jackie, I gave it a go. And she said, I gave it a go because you made it my choice. It was just a suggestion. I said, great. She said, I realized I don't like that chocolate.
There you go.
But I love watching TV with my daughter, and I love that we get to sit and have a bit of a laugh and a bit of a talk about the show. So I said, oh, okay, so what did you do? And she said, I replaced the chocolate, but I still didn't eat while we were watching the show. I made a fruit platter. And we actually, in the break, had a piece of fruit, and then we went and did our other things. But I also stopped and really focused on the flavor of the fruit, so I knew which ones I really enjoyed.
Yeah, there you go.
And from that little change, she started to release weight. Yeah. Then her confidence improved, and her mindset improved, and she continued to make smaller changes.
See, this is all about self-love, right? And it's changing routines, which change habits, and putting in place new routines, which will eventually end up as a new habit. And that's because that's how habits start, with routines. So we in new highways, and you just, it's a matter of going, it's an awareness. And in all of these things that we do, especially around food, it's an awareness, and we are not taught. But when it comes down to disease processes, for instance, like if you've been diagnosed with a particular condition, or you've got a disability of some description, or you're neurodiverse, there are foods that will make life far more challenging if you put them in. So my job as a medicinal nutritionist is, as I teach people, if you eat this, this is the result. This is what happens to your body when you eat this particular food. Now, you can still choose to eat it, but when you get the symptom, like when your body does X, or, you know, you start feeling like this, you can go, hey, you know what? I know that I ate, you know, bread yesterday, for instance, And now today I feel like this. And there is that link between the food that you've eaten and how you're feeling. Mm. And when I show people that and I start showing them that, then it's a really good educated, everything you put in your mouth is from an education point of view. Instead of just going, oh, I'm just going to eat this. And then the next day you go, oh, I feel terrible, but I've no idea what it is. So who cares? I'm just going to eat it all again.
Yes. And, you know, and
that's right. When I've gone, actually, you eat this, this is how you'll feel, they actually get that, then they know. So then 3 months down the track, when they decide they go out to someone's place and they go, oh, well, they've given me this food. Do I eat it or don't I eat it? Yes, I'm going to eat it. And then when you wake up the next day and you don't feel well, then you go, oh, that's because I ate X, Y, and Z yesterday. And then you can choose, right, I won't do that for another 3 months. And there isn't that confusion like, oh, why do I feel sick? Oh, I don't know why my symptoms of my disease are worse or whatever. So I love choice. I love informed choice. And as a nutritionist, that's what I want to do to all my patients, is to help them get informed choices around what's going on for them and their bodies. So I'm not your average nutritionist who just says, you go to see and go, hey, what am I going to eat? And I give you a program and go, eat this. Because if you're mentally not ready for it, it isn't going to work.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah. Love that, love that.
So it's all about education.
Absolutely. So we've got the March Connect and Grow magazine coming out live on the 16th of the month, which I'm looking at the calendar going, oh, that's only 11 days away. I better get my skates on.
Yeah.
Did you want to give the readers a little bit, don't give too much away, but just a little bit of what we're covering from the nutrition side of things for March?
With March, I'm just trying to, I wrote it a little while ago.
Our theme is talking about the seasonal changes, and I think that you were going to give them a really great recipe that's actually going to help with that.
Yeah. Thank you for prompting that in my mind. So the theme for March is very much around change, isn't it? It's about preparing for the change. So we now are going from this beautiful summer that we've had with all the summer fruits and all the summer foods that are out, and eating seasonally is a huge, it makes a huge difference to both our budgets, because things are cheaper when we do that, and also to our bodies. So, you know, like a lot of people will ask me, for instance, I want to eat a raw diet, right? I want to eat everything raw. Well, why would you do that in winter?
Yeah.
Because winter's not raw season. It's not time for our bodies. Winter is a time for us to have soups and stews and warm, comforting foods, because the weather is ghastly. So, you know, this is the sort of thing we do. So this coming into now, for that we're coming into autumn, and that's what it's all about. So autumn is about preparation. Preparing your body also for your immune system. Your immune system needs to be on high vigilance when it comes to winter or coming into autumn. At all the changes of the season, do you notice that's when we get sick, we get a different flu? Because all of those new flus are coming around. So if you've got a really healthy immune system, when you come in contact with the new viruses that are going around, your immune system can actually take care of that. So I've got an immune boosting soup, I think, is what I've actually put into this next magazine. So things like, you know, lots of ginger, lots of garlic, all of these beautiful things that are turmeric, that are actually going to help boost our immune system. And I've sort of talked about that in this next March magazine.
Can't wait to try it out. Well, I will be making a couple of slight adjustments because of my intolerances, like such as the garlic. I used to love garlic, but can't tolerate it now. And that's the beauty for our listeners with Kathy's recipes. If you haven't checked them out, you can go onto the website and check out the previous editions, is that they're really straightforward, but at the same time, you know, there's so much flavor in them that, for example, if you can't have, say, garlic in something, there's so many other flavors in there that you're still going to enjoy.
Yeah.
So, you know, have that little bit of flexibility. Don't look at it and think, oh, I can't have this, because you are playing with the whole foods and you're playing with where you can shop. And if you're worried about budget, like, you know, because a lot of people used to say to me, Jackie, it's easier for me to get takeaway because it's cheaper. I don't know that that's actually true. I don't know that that was necessarily true then or even true now, but that's a person's belief, which I acknowledge. But if you plan your meals, and we've now got, Kathy's provided us with, I think, about 6 recipes now. So if you went over our past magazines as well, you're already building up a little bit of a recipe book, and it can actually get you thinking about other things. But if you're not sure where to start, if you're like, oh, I feel yuck, I feel this, I feel that, in the finished version of this show, so when we put it on the podcast area, we're going to have Kathy's link in there. So you can click on that link, go to the website and book a time to see Kathy, because you don't have to do it on your own. You don't have to work it out on your own, and nor should you. And it doesn't hurt to have a conversation, a starting point.
So one of the way we do small changes make big differences. So you don't want to, a lot of people who will go, who start on, say they do one of my programs, a lot of them will go, oh my goodness, but this has got so many more ingredients that I don't have. And just start buying the ingredients, one different thing at a week. You know, maybe 1 week you're buying legumes and the next week you're buying beans, and that you can keep them dried and you can learn how to cook them. And when I have a patient who comes to see me, I don't mind if you send me an email that'll just say, hey, I've got visitors coming over this weekend. Can you please give me a recipe for X, Y, and Z? Or I was contemplating making this recipe, how do I veganize it, or how do I make it more plant-based, or and I'm more than happy to help people out with that type of thing, because it's not an easy task to learn how to change your cooking, especially cultural. If you've got a certain culture, how do I, if you're Italian, how do I make my lasagna more healthy, or how do I, you know, what can I do there? That little hints and tips that you can do, because you've got your big Italian family coming over for the weekend. What can I do? What can I do if I'm eating Greek food, for instance, and you want to do, can I make a more vegetarian and healthier thing of a moussaka? You know, it depends. But there are ways of doing these things, because that can actually make those small changes, and you just need to slowly but surely start transitioning your pantry, because it is an expensive thing to transition your pantry. One of the things I've said in this month's article is about stocking up on your staples. You know, what can I use, and what can be quick? You know, food just, my daughter the other day, I was over, my daughter's just had a baby.
Right. And I was congratulations.
Thank you. And I was over at her house, and I didn't have long, and I needed to go, and she was sitting feeding, and I said, so what are you having for dinner? And she said, oh, I don't know, we might have to do takeout, because there's absolutely nothing and I haven't been to the shops, and you know what it's like when you have a brand new baby. And I said, so her husband, I said, so, you know, your husband's coming home to nothing cooked, you know. And she was looking at me, and I said, let me see. She said, Mum, there's absolutely nothing in the fridge. So I had a look. She had an onion. She had some celery. She had a carrot. She had half a green pepper.
Mm-hmm.
I looked in her pantry. She had black beans. She had cannellini beans, and she had a tin of tomatoes. And then in their herb cupboard, they had some herbs. So, and she also had a piece of very sick-looking corn.
Okay.
And so I went, no worries. So I made her, just using that, and some herbs and spices. I made her a beautiful bean mix. I made it Mexican flavored bean mix because she did have an avocado sitting there. And I said, and when your husband gets home, tell him to put some rice on. You're going to mix the rice through it. So you've got this beautiful Mexican rice, top it with some avocado. And she sent me a message going, Mummy, it was absolutely delicious. I don't know how you do it. But it took me literally 10 minutes to put it together. Yeah.
Yes. And this is a message that I'd love our listeners to get, is that, as Kathy has said, and if you've ever worked with me, you know I have the same belief, it's one change at a time. So while the picture can be really big of where you want to go and what you want to achieve, it's got to be the steps at the right pace for you. But also when you open up your mind to what is possible and then have a look and go with the right tools. And all of that, like your daughter had the perception that there's nothing really in the cupboard, but you saw so many opportunities.
Yeah, so many potentials. And she was like, how did you just do that? And I said, well, you saw me do it. And I said, and what's more is that we used up the limp-looking carrot. We used up the half a green pepper that really was on its last legs. there were things that were going to go into the bin, and the celery was a little bit aged as well. But when I put it all together, she was like, hey, this is amazing. And it gave them a really good nutritious meal for that night, and it saved them money because they were going to get takeout, and they, money, they've just had a baby and she's stopping work and all of those sorts of things. So money is a bit of an issue. So it was, you know, we didn't need to do that. We just didn't need to do it. But she then, and I showed her and I said, look, this is what you can do, and you could do it in 10 minutes, you know. When the baby's having kicking time, you could have put this together in 10 minutes. I mean, I love the fact that I was able to do it for her, because that made me feel fantastic as, you know, a very useful mummy.
So,
open your mind to the possibilities. I had a patient yesterday who's taken 4 weeks to actually, she's been transitioning very, very slowly. And but she now came in to see me yesterday, and she was like, oh my goodness, I can do this and I can do that, and I did this and I did that, and I'm cooking and I'm loving it. And I was, yeah, there you go. That's what it's about, getting back into the kitchen.
So
it's more changes.
Yes, and I do know that for a long time I did struggle, like, with cooking and changing my portion sizes with cooking. So I went through a phase of throwing a lot of food out because it was just me. And so effectively now when I look at a recipe, I adapt the quantity, because sometimes it's going to feed, say, 4 people, for example. I want it for one, but that one is probably going to feed me for 2 or 3 meals. So this is where really good freezer containers is good as well. And that can be such a cost-saving thing as well. So you're getting the best of both worlds. You're getting really yummy meals. And I was just having a thought that with portion sizes, if we went out to, I don't know, a really fancy restaurant, so to speak. I don't even really like that word, but let's just say we went to a really top class restaurant and we think about the food size, the portion size, they're actually small.
Most
of the time. If we went out to a really great restaurant near Crown or a top rated chef.
Five star restaurant. They're going to give you very, very small portions.
Yes, versus going out for the counter meal, which is the plate absolutely full. So when eating out, it's also really good to do a little bit of research on what that restaurant offers.
Yeah. That's a very good idea. With Chris and myself, so my husband and myself, when we go to restaurants, we always look at the menu before we go. Always. Look at the menu before you go. We read through the menu and we find the things that we know we can have.
Yes.
So when we get there, we've already know what we're going to have, and you're not tempted to go to reread the menu, if you like, and go, oh, maybe we could just have that, you know, or, you know, that would be, you know, because I'm tired, or maybe that'd be good. We know what we're going to do before we get there.
It's
a really easy, and when we go, so if we've been invited out with friends, we always look at the menu and then we go, actually, there is nothing on there that fits into our regime. So we go to the sides and we go, you know what? We could make a meal out of, I can have a side of a salad, I can have a side of, you know, that they might have beans, they might have a couple of different salads, they might have whatever it is, potatoes, whatever, and we can make our own meal up by using those sides.
So it's,
but we never go to a restaurant having not looked at the menu first. And if worse comes to worse and there is absolutely nothing on there, like we're going to Vlados or something's only meat and we don't eat it, then I would ring the chef, ring the restaurant, speak to the chef, and the chef will always go, no worries, I'll make you something special. I've only had, and we do this all around the world, I've only ever had, I think, one restaurant, it was over in Perth, that said to me, sorry, no, we won't help you. So I said, that's all right, myself and my 20 friends that I was bringing to your restaurant, because you will not make any adjustments for me, we'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, thank you, but we'll find somewhere else. Yeah.
And there was 20 of us, right? So could you imagine 20 people booking and the alcohol and everything? Yes. Can you imagine what that people, all because they wouldn't make, because I would have been happy with steamed vegetables and rice, and they would not do that. What an idiot.
I haven't been out as much as I used to. So I used to go to little cafes and write, you know, my next book or like work there on my laptop and have a meal there as well. Purely because it got me out of the house, it got me around people. So it was a little bit of a connection thing too. But I eventually, because they won't give me smaller portion sizes, so they won't, like, and I always say to them, if the main meal is, say, $20 or $30, I'll say, I'll pay the price, but could you just put it on a smaller plate, like a smaller portion? I'm still happy to pay the full price if that's what you're worried about, but I'm going to save you one egg, I'm going to save you half of the rice or half of the whatever, because if you give it to all to me, I'm going to end up sending most of it back. Purely because I can't eat it and you can't give that to anyone else.
No.
So I have had a couple of places that have got to know me. Like if you go there regularly, they will go, oh, yep, that's just Jackie. Yep, this is how she has it. That's fine. Put that order through. And then
how marvelous! Absolutely, what a fantastic restaurant to go up to that they will do that for you.
Yes, but it's taken a lot of work, and a lot of places can't even, they're insulted that you're not eating the whole meal. But at the same time, you go, it was really yummy. Like, it's not actually the food quality.
No, no.
I try to explain it, but it still falls on.
We've had chefs come out and come to our table and say, can I just say thank you so much for giving me the challenge of cooking for you tonight, because I've never cooked like this before. It was really interesting coming up with something that I thought you would enjoy, because, you know, we've gone, oh, my goodness, this is fantastic. Thank you. It's so delicious. It's so wonderful. And the chef has come out and actually thanked us for giving him that opportunity to cook for us. And we've had that happen all over the world. Quite a few times, and because you know how you think to yourself, oh, I don't want to be a bother, oh, yes, you know, I don't want to do this because I don't want to insult them, or, oh, I don't want to be a bother, I don't want to stand out from the crowd, or all of those sorts of things. If you look at it the other way and you go, hey, you know, this, if, and especially if the chef embraces it, you know, mm-hmm, I've made his night. He's sick and tired of cooking the same food night in, night out for people. They were going, no, I can use my brain. I can actually make something for you. But I always say to the restaurant, look, we have a health concern. My husband has multiple sclerosis. Unfortunately, he's on a very strict dietary regime. We're really looking forward to coming to your restaurant. Can you help? And they always, except for this one restaurant in Perth, they have always said, absolutely fantastic. This is a, you know, thank you for the opportunity.
And it is in the framing, because at the end of the day, it is your health and that. Like, I do know a lot of people that have had bariatric surgery that have. I remember one poor person, she shared that she was so devastated because the weight started to come back on, right? Yeah. Well, of course it's going to come back on if you don't make long-term changes.
Yeah.
And I said to her, look, I'm happy to have a chat, you know, because I was a bit concerned of the way she'd written her post. And I had a chat with her and I said, so how are we going with your portion sizes? Like, let's have a look at what's going on. And she said, well, I was so excited like two or three months ago because I could finally eat a Big Mac again.
Oh, great.
And I went, okay, so could I just point out how many Big Macs are you now having in a week? And she goes, well, I have two a day. And I went, okay, I'd just like to point out that's potentially, and I'm not the dietitian, but that is potentially where your problem has started. You have now stretched your stomach. And she goes, yeah, I can now eat a half of a large pizza. And I went, okay, so I'm seeing where the problem is, because I still, after one slice of pizza, and I had bariatric surgery over 5 years ago. I had it 7 years ago. I still can't eat. I'd be lucky to eat two slices of pizza.
Yeah.
And that's because I took the time. So in another show, guys, I'm going to unpack that a little bit more for those of you that have had bariatric surgery. So Kathy, I want to say thank you so much for being part of today. Now, are you going to come back next month and have another chat with us next month?
Yes, if you'll have me. And
absolutely.
And maybe if anyone's got some questions regarding something that they'd like to hear us talk about from a nutrition point of view, if they can send you a message, Jackie, that we could actually fit in with what anyone would like to talk about as well, because it's a long and big story.
We've covered a lot today too, which is really great. All right, guys, well, we're going to wrap up the show. The recording will be available a little bit later on today. You'll find it all on our social media. You'll find it on the same page as the profile of the show. And keep an eye out for our March Connect and Grow. Keep an eye out for Kathy's details. And if you haven't already got the previous Connect and Grow magazines, you can go check them out on the website as well. So we're going to go out to playing our theme song that I had written for me a few years ago by Tatiana Stavnitsky and Mark Watson. So thanks, guys, for listening, and tune in tomorrow. Thanks.
Have a great day, everybody. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.